First-time home buyers could snag lower costs for FHA loans under a house passed bill if they just do one thing, and it is totally worth it. We'll fill you in. Plus, the thing so many said was never going to be happening. Millennials are getting more into moving to the, could this be real? The suburbs. They are coming in strong, and they are reshaping the new home market. And we have guest co-host Chad Coach Carson, our real estate expert, right here with us today. That and so much more coming up on this edition of Money with Friends. Welcome to Money with Friends. I'm Bobby Rebel, host of the Financial Grown Up Podcast, coming to you from my very grown-up kitchen in New York City.
And I'm Chad Carson. I'm coming to you from, I think it's the plant room in my apartment in Cuenca, Ecuador. I've got a sunlight and a lot of plants, so I'm having a good time down in South America.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about where Chad is coming from. It's pretty cool. But first, let me tell you a little bit about what we do here on Money with Friends. We take the headlines that everyone is buzzing about, and we use them as a foundation to share money insights and specific ways that we can all get better with money. Most of all, we do it with our friends like Chad. We want them here because they bring fresh perspectives to the podcast. And of course, the show is taped live in front of a Facebook audience. Their comments are part of the show as well. For more information on how you can be part of the audience and get to our schedule, go to moneywithfriendspodcast.com. This episode of Money with Friends is sponsored by Tiller, your financial life in a spreadsheet automatically updated each day. Go to stackingbenjamins.com/Tiller for a free trial and to support the show. All right, Chad, you're coming to us. Last time you were here in the United States from your home office. Now, different. Now you're from the plant room in Ecuador. What's going on?
Yeah, so our family likes to travel, so we're weird like that. Some people collect, I don't know, salt shakers.
Wonderful.
Weird and wonderful. Okay, good. So we like to travel, and Latin America in particular has a fond place in our heart. So we're in Ecuador, a place where we spent about a year and a half, and it's in particular we're in a city called Cuenca, Ecuador. It's high up in the Andes Mountains, about 8,000 feet, and it's just a beautiful old colonial city, and lots of neat rivers and parks, and so we enjoy coming back here and visiting friends and practicing our Spanish. I like to play basketball, so on weekends that's my thing to go. I got in a pickup basketball tournament last weekend, Bobby, and I didn't even realize I was going to play. And they said, "Come play, Chad. Bring your shoes." And I ended up playing like two games in one day, and my feet were sore. It was a lot of fun.
That sounds so cool, and I love that your kids are learning Spanish. Well, they know Spanish, but they're picking it up again. You guys have a whole community there, which is the best way to travel, is to be part of the community, like you said, playing basketball with your friends.
Exactly. You learn the real Spanish when you're out on the basketball court. And I think my kids probably learn the real Spanish. It's the real Spanish in school as well. But yeah.
All right. Well, we're keeping this a family show, so we're going to move on.
Exactly.
Let's talk to one of our friends to get us to the headlines.
We'll supply the coffee and they will supply the headlines. That's why I watch Money with Friends.
All right. I am going to read the first headline. Chad's going to read the second headline today. All right. Here goes. Number one, it is from CNBC, from Sarah O'Brien. First-time homebuyers could snag lower costs for FHA loans under House passed bill. In addition to annual mortgage insurance that FHA loans require, borrowers also must pay upfront mortgage insurance equal to 1.75% of the base loan amount. The bipartisan House bill that passed recently would reduce that to 1.5% for borrowers. Here's the big part of the headline, I guess. It is still the headline, but to borrowers who go through counseling intended to make them financially responsible homeowners. Called the Housing Financial Literacy Act, the measure would apply to first-time homebuyers who take out a mortgage backed by the Federal Housing Administration. Borrowers who go through the counseling aimed at helping them be financially responsible homeowners would get a discount on the upfront mortgage insurance that all FHA loans require borrowers to pay. Quote, the idea behind the legislation is that counseling should improve loan performance and make people better borrowers, says Pete Mills, Senior Vice President of Residential Policy for the Mortgage Bankers Association, which generally supports the bill. Okay, here's the standout stat of the piece, Chad. The delinquency rate on FHA loans is close to 9%, compared with about 3% for conventional loans, according to data from the Mortgage Bankers Association. So let's just pause there. Chad, what's your reaction? First of all, are you surprised about the delinquency rate?
No. In the banking world, when you make a loan, generally that the rule is you want to have more skin in the game, meaning a bigger down payment, and you want to have a higher credit score. FHA loans aren't designed to have bigger down payments or higher credit scores. They're designed as a program to get first-time homebuyers into the game, into the homebuyer game. And so they allow you to get in with a lower down payment and typically a lower credit score than you would get on the private, completely private market. And so the fact that it's a little bit higher is probably expected, but that's also why they cost a little bit more. There's more subsidy from the federal government. There's a higher insurance cost for the borrowers. And that's really what this headline is about, though, trying to make it a little bit more affordable if the borrower can demonstrate that they're being a little bit more responsible and might not be one of those statistics.
Yeah. And you make a good point, because the article goes on to say that roughly 83% of all FHA loans in 2018 went to first-time home buyers. So this is definitely aimed at helping people get into their very first home. And by definition, many of those people would not know what it's like to own a home. They might not necessarily know all of the different things that go into owning your first home. What do you think are some of the things that might surprise people, especially from a financial standpoint, in owning their first home?
Yeah, I think one of the big things that surprised me and probably surprises people who get these FHA loans is that it's not just your down payment that it's going to be the cash that you need to save for your home. There's all sorts of cash costs that come out. And that's one of the reasons people get into delinquencies that I've found is that you're kind of on the edge. You know, you had enough money to pay the bills this month, and then your car broke down and you had this bill and this bill. You know, that happens. That's part of life. And so if you don't have a big reserve, a big cash reserve, and that's where financial counseling could come in. If you can help somebody kind of start setting some money aside ahead of time, start saving some cash, then when that car breaks down and you have a $500 bill, it doesn't create this ripple effect where you get late on your mortgage payment, you get late fees, and then this happens. And so I think that's a big part of the education, is just planning ahead and actually knowing that you've got to save money. You've got to think two or three steps ahead, not just 1 or 2 weeks ahead. And it's a process. It's not something you're born with. You've got to, like everything else, you got to learn it. And so hopefully you learn it before you actually get into the situation where you're in a delinquency.
And for our listeners that aren't familiar with the different requirements for FHA loans, the article goes on to say that the FHA loans come with less stringent requirements than conventional loans, because they're often used by first-time borrowers with low or moderate incomes who have lower credit scores, as Chad pointed out, than other borrowers. And due to the increased risk for lenders, borrowers are required to pay mortgage insurance to the FHA for many years or over the life of the loan, depending on the particulars of the terms, as well as an upfront mortgage insurance premium. Now, that upfront, this is what they're talking about in this bill. That upfront amount currently is equal to 1.75% of the base loan amount. It can be paid at closing or rolled into the loan. Now, the problem with rolling it into the loan, of course, and that probably happens more often than not, given that these people are often stretching to buy their first home and they, you know, are looking to cut their out-of-pocket costs, when you roll it into the closing costs, you don't necessarily appreciate that quarter point, right?
Correct. Yeah. I think all of us know, like, when you have to actually come out of pocket, and let's say you're going to a restaurant and you pay the cash instead of using the credit card and just swiping it and throwing it on the credit, you know, you actually remember and you notice that bill. And so, yeah, I think this 375 or the 0.25% discount, I think for people who pay it up front, they'll feel a little bit more. They'll know that they're paying, coming out of pocket less than people who roll it into the loan. And I wanted to go back. We had one of our Facebook commenters make a comment. Dylan Rhodes made a good point that a lot of the times the down payments are smaller on an FHA loan. And so people, because of that, maybe when you're preparing for a 20% down payment, you're already in that saving mode. Whereas if you're paying 3.5% down or something like that, sometimes you think that's all you got to have and it's your first time. And so he was just kind of backing up what we were talking about, that sometimes getting prepared and having some counseling and understanding the total cost of home ownership, not only up front, but he also made the point ongoing. You have ongoing maintenance expenses, you have ongoing mortgage insurance, you have your mortgage payments, of course. And so it's just getting to that mindset that this is not like a short-term thing. This is a long-term thing. But on the other hand, there's some long-term benefits. That's what I really like the FHA program, because I think it gets people into houses, particularly in these higher price markets that might not get into a house otherwise. I mean, coming up with 20% down on a $400,000 property, I mean, that's a lot of money for a lot of people. And so if you can come up with a 3.5% down payment and benefit from home ownership, I'm just a big fan. And I think it's one of the government programs that really does incentivize the right thing and help people build wealth and get into the game of real estate.
And I think most people doing this would be very happy to be given the financial literacy education that they're talking about here, not only for the discount, but also just to have it. These are people that want to be successful in this venture. And the article goes on, I should say, to do a little bit of a math. So here's how the numbers would work. They do it on a $200,000 home. So just double the numbers if you want to go to Chad's scenario. The standard upfront mortgage premium would be $3,500. The discount would reduce that amount to $3,000. So that's $500. In Chad's case, it would be $1,000, presumably, that you would save. And that's real money in your pocket that could just be added to your emergency fund if you just want to have a little more security as a homeowner. So this is real money, even at these entry-level first, you know, starter home price points, this can really add up. I do want to also point out that this is a bill. It is not yet law. It still faces an uncertain future in the Senate, but it was bipartisan. So I'm going to say I'm optimistic. I don't see much downside here. So we can only hope that it does pass. And there
the
is
the bipartisan part jumped out at me as well. That was like, what, the bipartisan bill? Like what topic are both parties supporting? And home ownership, I mean, I come back to that a lot. It's one of those things that across the spectrum politicians tend to get behind, is trying to increase home ownership. So that's one reason owning real estate is a good investment, whether you're buying it as a home or as a rental property, is that the tendency is for laws like tax laws, like financing laws, to be supportive of homeownership, which helps you over the long run with being able to sell your property or have property values go up.
Yeah. And I also, it does go on to talk about how the counseling would go. There was something similar. This is why I'm optimistic that it will pass. There was something similar, or there is actually. The FHA currently has the authority to provide a discount to borrowers who go through financial counseling, but it can only apply, and it's just outdated. It can only apply in situations where the upfront insurance premiums exceed 2.75%. So right now it's at 1.75%. So that's from a time, really, I don't know when rates were so much higher. It seems like we've been in this low rate environment for a decade, really. Although that's just anecdotally, I don't have the stats in front of me. It seems a long time ago that we were in such higher rates. But if they were higher than 2.75%, then this would be. So it's really just an update of where the benchmark is, right?
It's in, like you said, that upfront, if the upfront fee is so high that before the law before is they couldn't get that discount anyway, but the fee has been below that FHA fee for a long time. And so this is really just kind of catching up with the times and really providing incentives where they need to be. You know, you want to have a program that incentivizes the right things, the right behavior, and getting counseling, whether it's financial counseling or any other kind of counseling, is a good practice, particularly for somebody new to something like this. It's a big deal, buying your first property.
And we have, I just want to do one quick more comment before we get to our takeaways. And it's also from Dylan. He says the financial counseling can also help people right-size the home they get. A bank may approve a $300,000 loan, but in reality, $200,000 may fit their bigger picture budget better. I think that's an excellent point, because the truth is people often have different agendas, and a bank wants to lend, you know, at the end of the day, they want to make loans so they can earn money, especially if they're going to be higher interest loans and they can add on additional fees and so on. When people really see the differences, not only in their monthly payments, but in the unexpected costs of home ownership, and they fully understand the complete picture of it, they may not want to stretch to that slightly bigger house. They may decide that smaller is better for them. So, yeah. Let's move on to takeaways. Chad, what is your takeaway from this?
I think one of my takeaways is that first-time home buyers continue to be a priority politically. You know, home ownership's I think when we talked about on the last show, you and I talked about how it's getting unaffordable in so many different places. Mm-hmm. So I think this is just one of those signs. I'm not sure it's going to be a comprehensive way to solve affordable home ownership, but it is one way that you can see that that's one of the top priorities politically, that bipartisan support for getting some kind of first-time home buyer bill through is one of those things. It's a top priority. It's important. But affordable housing and first-time home buyers continue to be a challenge. That getting people into the game is not easy. And this is just one kind of chink in the kind of chipping away at trying to make that easier.
Yeah, I think I would agree. My takeaway is that education literally pays off because we want to get people in the game, but we want to make them successful while they are there, after they get there. So let's move on to our second story, Chad. You brought this one to the table, and it's something that actually surprised me because it goes against all of the different takeaways that, I'm sorry, all of the different sort of stereotypes, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. So this is about, this is about millennials, and I'm right on the edge of the millennials. I was born December 26th, 1979. If I were born on January. Yeah. Yes. I'm barely a Gen Xer. If I were born 5 days later, I would have been millennial. So, you know, I'm on the edge there. This is about millennials and homeownership. And the headline is Millennials Will Reshape the New Home Market. And I want to read a little bit of this. This is by Brad Hunter at Forbes.com. And it said, in surveys taken 10 years ago, millennials used to say they would never want to live in the suburbs. And they initially showed little interest in getting married and starting families. Following the housing crash, millions of them moved in with their parents, further slowing household formation. Generation Y, which is what they are also called, used to be a small part of the housing market, but now the millennials account for more than one third of all home purchases. And I wanted to pause on that because that's a really big number. Like one third of all home purchases are coming from millennials. I mean, that's kind of a revolution type number. That's a really big number that we used to associate with, you know, the baby boomers, who are still a big force as well. But the millennials have come into their own. They're a big portion of the home buying market.
Yes. And
and so just continuing here, and then we can have a little bit of discussion. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead, John.
There's just a little bit of data that I thought would help us, and then we can have a discussion on it. So data from the National Association of Realtors showed that the older millennials, those born between 1980 and 89, hey, that's about my group right there, by themselves account for 26% of all home purchases. The older millennials now in their 30s have started having children and are showing an increasing desire to own a home. And sometimes those homes are in shutter the suburbs. All right, that's enough.
They're doing all the things that people said they wouldn't do. In other words, they're growing up just like everyone else does.
Yeah, they were a little late to the game, right? But you know, we got to be fair to the millennials. They take a lot of flack in the media, and then just jokes as well. But the thing is, they had the Great Recession. You know, think about, you know, if you came out of college or you came out of high school in 2008 and 9 and 10, when the biggest recession since the Great Depression. You know, they had a big headwind financially. And so living at home with your parents or moving into and having roommates in the city with other people, you know, that's part of what you would expect in a financial downturn. And I think it's most people who study this stuff and follow demographics find it natural that they'd be forming more households, getting married, sometimes having kids, although not as high a rate as they used to be. And so part of that when you form a household is going and starting to buy a house. And so we talked about affordable housing earlier, and one of the things that me as a real estate investor I study is different markets and where people are moving. And so I found it very interesting that the millennials have tended to live in the urban areas, so New York City, Chicago, Washington D.C., San Francisco. That's millennials used to watch Friends and those kind of shows in Seinfeld growing up. Like that generation grew up watching cities and wanting to live in more urban environments. But now they're looking at, I'm going to buy a house and I can't afford some of the prices in the big cities. And so the natural kind of progression is to look in the suburbs and to look at places where houses are a little bit more affordable.
And I think it's interesting. People can go to our website, moneywithfriendspodcast.com, and get a link to the article. And you can see there's a lot of really great infographics in this article. And it breaks down the data from each different generation, even within the generation. So it has, for example, younger millennials, they're 11% of recent buyers, but they consider at 40% consider commuting costs very important, and convenience to job, 71% convenience to job influence neighborhood choices. And this is not surprising. 86% were first-time homebuyers. And then when you get to the older millennials, they also talk about student debt and how that factored into the decision. So you can see the different things that resonated with each generation as it goes through. So I think that the infographic is really interesting.
I agree. And I used to grow up this kind of showing my nerdiness. When I was growing up, I used to like watch maps and look at maps and kind of play games like that. And that's what's kind of fun about demographics is you look at some of these big picture trends as an investor, as a real estate investor like I am, or just anybody who's sort of thinking about these things. And it's fun to see where the big movements of society are going. And sort of as an aside to this article, that's very similar. Like as I pay attention to like real estate consultants who write about, you know, these things. And there's a book called Big Shifts Ahead by John Burns, who's a real estate consultant. And he also talks very similar to this article about the movement of millennials and in that generation and how that affects everything, both the overall economic market, but particularly builders and real estate investors. The millennials are a huge generation. A lot of people don't realize that. The Generation Xers, we were a little bit smaller than the millennials. The millennials are the kids of the baby boomers, right, and will have, over the long run, just as big of an effect on every buying decision that they make, whether it's real estate, whether it's, you know, their other consumer taste. And so whatever business you're in or whether investor you're in, you have to pay attention to these big movements. And in real estate in particular, one of the things I've noticed about millennials from just studying these kind of consulting reports is that they like the urban areas. Like they chose to go live in New York City in these places where you had public transit and walkability. And so now that they're moving to the suburbs, you might think, oh, they're just going back and doing the same thing that their parents did. But no, that's not exactly how it's working. A lot of them are moving to the suburbs, but they're finding these little niches in the suburbs that are very urban-like, that are walkable, that do have public transportation. And there's actually been a term coined for that. Instead of going into the pure suburbs, they're going into the suburban neighborhood. So they're in the suburbs, they're more affordable, but they're around like these old town centers that they have kind of character and they're walkable. And so if you're into that kind of thing, if you're an investor, if you're looking to where the next opportunities are, you know, big cities are always going to be there. They're still doing well, but a lot of the places in the South, the Southwest, the medium-sized cities that were sort of off the radar a little bit, but that are now people are moving there because jobs are a little bit more mobile. A lot of the jobs are moving south. The weather's a little bit better. So that's one of those big picture trends that I like to pay attention to.
People also have information at their fingertips. And a lot of this data in this infographic that I was referencing before talks about the fact that younger people are finding these homes through online resources, which sounds like something we take for granted now. But certainly when the boomers were looking for housing, which is the previous huge generation, leaving out us, the Gen Xers, when the boomers were looking, I mean, that was not a resource. So they couldn't necessarily, it was a little bit harder to move because at the end of the day, you're not going to move to a place, I mean, in theory, you should see real estate in person, but you can do a lot from afar and get a sense of a place through all these mobile apps and do so much. There's so much information at your fingertips that I think that it does make people more comfortable moving to places that may be a little bit far away to achieve the goals and the lifestyle goals that come along with the housing that they select. Is that something that you think is true?
That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, obviously millennials grew up with technology and the internet and using apps. And so real estate has become a app-driven, technology-driven consumer experience. And the other thing that goes along with that, so not only when they're buying houses, they have a lot more transparency. They can see what's going on. They can see what the buyer paid for the property right before they make an offer on it. But the other thing is the rental economy. Like there are a lot of people who are just choosing to move somewhere and rent and not own anything. And that's sort of a flip in psychology. The baby boomers were very much about the American dream and freedom is about owning a property. Whereas millennials have kind of flipped that around a little bit. There's still people who own properties, but there's a lot of them who say, you know what, I want flexibility, I want freedom. And that means not owning a car, that means not owning a house. And that's just a different psychology, and that affects the real estate market as well. There's a lot more people who are going to be renting from long-term landlords than instead of owning it.
I also think people are more have the resources to educate themselves just online about different things. There's so many different calculators and tools. We have a comment from Dylan in the audience saying, millennials with a house in the suburbs, maybe he means suburbs, I forget the term,
Serban,
only put 5% down due to student loans, but double down to get rid of PMI as soon as possible. The fact that they kind of know to do that and to get rid of that PMI, which is the extra insurance, is something that many of them may know just because there are so many more resources for this generation than there were for other generations.
Yeah, you can read on the internet, you can watch a YouTube video, you can watch Money with Friends and learn about these things, or listen to Money with Friends. So I think you know, the consumer experience has changed. There's no doubt about it. People are more, they're more educated, and they also just have the information at their fingertips. And I think that's a good thing for the real estate market. The real estate market's been a little archaic in that there's not as much transparency. And I think all of these movements towards more transparency, towards more, you know, power at the consumer's fingertips is all a good thing.
I agree. Do you want to finish out the article?
Yes. Let me get back on my, pull it up here.
Maybe we should talk about the incomes. Incomes are finally starting to increase nicely for this generation.
Yeah, and you're going to have to help me out on that one, Bobby. I lost my spot there. Go for it. I was getting so distracted and excited talking about it, and I lost my spot.
Well, we're both very passionate about this market, about the whole idea of real estate. We're both homeowners. You're an investor as well, although I'm in New York City, so that is by definition an investment.
Yes.
Part of this, I wanted to get to this last part because it is important, and it is part of what is driving millennials to buy homes finally, and part of what kept them from buying earlier was that incomes are finally starting to increase nicely for this generation. Harvard study drawing upon current population survey observes that median per capita income across the entire population rose 2.9% in real terms in 2016 to 2017. But the 25 to 34 age group saw an 11.3% increase. So even if a young household has enough income to buy a home, however, coming up with enough savings for the down payment can often be a challenge. Gen Y is the largest generation in U.S. history. You basically hinted at that. So now we have that confirmed. Mm-hmm. And for those of us old enough to remember how baby boomers transformed the housing market, it is easy to imagine that this generation, the millennials, will do the same. But it sounds like they're going to transform the housing market in a different way from how the baby boomers did it.
I think so. They're doing it in their own way. But I think that, you know, history does repeat itself in some ways. And then the history that's repeating itself here is that a big group of people are coming to their own. And so it's going to affect the market. We talked about that a little bit. Millennials are that. But they do have their own patterns. They have their own way of doing things. And they also have their own experiences. And so we were alluded to the Great Recession. And, you know, the fact that their incomes are finally catching up is part of why we're seeing this trend of people buying houses more, moving out of their parents' basements. You know, they've had to recover from student debt, from the Great Recession. And so it's just taken a little bit longer than people probably expected in a normal economic recovery. But most of the people who study real estate economics are now saying this looks more like the normal recovery that we thought would happen because people there's more first-time home buyers who are getting to the market. That's typically what you see. A lot of the home sales that happened right after the recession were either investors or people who were kind of moving up to a second home. But the pure kind of, hey, these are new people in the market, new people building wealth, the millennials, they're getting there. And that's why I think this headline was a big deal and this trend's a big deal.
What do you think that means for investors? Is it going to be harder to find deals at the right price point? Because I know on your podcast, you talk a lot about the importance of making sure you get the right price for the economic outlook of a property.
I think it's more competitive. So that there's certainly this market, there's a lower supply of housing. And so a lot of the reason has been a lot of the construction has not kept up with the demand. I mean, there's just so many people wanting to buy houses and getting to the market. So they're sucking out a lot of the supply. But over the long run, we're in a, you know, pretty dynamic market. Builders are going to meet that need, but they're typically going to meet it in the suburbs. You know, it's really hard to build in the middle of a downtown in a big city. This is really difficult. There's a lot of barriers to entry. And that's another reason I think you'll see a lot of the people moving into the suburbs, particularly to the suburban areas, you know, the revitalized downtowns, walkable areas, because it is more affordable to buy a lot. It's more affordable to do some new construction there.
All right. I think we have the word of the day, suburban. Chad, what's your takeaway?
<clears throat> <laughs>
So what is your takeaway, Chad?
Losing my connection there, Bobby. You're going to have to help me out on that one again.
All right. You know what? We were going to do takeaways now. So I'll do mine first. My takeaway from this is that delayed is not the same as different, and the millennials may be more like older generations than we previously expected. Chad, you get the last word on the takeaways.
All right. My takeaway is that don't ever say never that you might do things like your parents. So the millennials are moving to the burbs. They thought they would never do it, but you don't have to do it like your parents. You can move to these suburban areas. You can still have your public transit and your walkability, just like your parents did.
All sounds good. All right. Before we do, we have a couple of comments. Let's just get to Elizabeth says, great home buying advice. Thank you so much for that comment. And let me just, we're going to be talking about Tiller for 1 second. And then we will move on to the big idea. We have with us our live Facebook audience who is joining us. And we will get back to Chad in just a minute. We seem to have a small technical problem, so just bear with us. Let me bring Chad back in. Okay, Chad, can you hear me? I think we've lost Chad, so I'm going to have Chad go out and back in. As everyone who's a regular listener knows, this is taped in front of a live Facebook audience, and occasionally, less recently, but occasionally we do have some technical issues. So we're going to bring Chad back in just a minute. But while we are doing that, we've got Chad back. So I think Chad is back with us. We are going to talk about our sponsor, and our sponsor is Tiller. Hey, Chad. Chad's back with us.
Hi, everybody. Sorry about that.
Just in time to talk about Tiller.
Great.
Chad, I know you're very organized with your money. I feel like we could all always be a little bit more organized, and that's why we love Tiller here at Money with Friends. So Tiller is great because it helps you organize your money. Basically, it works. You can do it 10 times faster in a spreadsheet with Tiller. It is the only service that connects your banks to Google Sheets and Excel with your daily spending, transactions, and balances. And unlike financial apps that force you to compromise, spreadsheets are fully customizable for your needs. Tiller makes them even better with an automatic daily feed of your spending, balances, and transactions. So basically, this eliminates data entry and multiple account logins. You just connect your banks once to see your transactions automatically updated each day. Basically, you set it up once and you don't have to do it again. Go to stackingbenjamins.com/Tiller for more information and a free trial. And a reminder, it is on the Stacking Benjamins website because Money with Friends is part of the Stacking Benjamins family of podcasts. And by the way, I just want to remind everyone, we do have a new website. It is Money with Friends. I mixed it up. Money with Friends. I'm all frazzled from that technical glitch that is now all solved. You can get more information about Coach Carson and all of his ventures, along with the other 7 of our 8 regular Money Friend guests. And included in the information about Coach Carson that I want to mention is you've got a new course happening too.
Yeah, I provide a free course, and particularly it's a good topic today, first-time homebuyers, because I like to help a lot of people get started with real estate investing. So I have a free course where people can kind of get those first steps, not be overwhelmed with buying your first investment property. I take them kind of step by step through that for free. So if people are interested in that, I hope they check it out.
Definitely check it out, and we will put a link to that in our schedule under this taping entry, and also under the air date for this podcast, there will be a link for that as well. All right, Chad, who's going to do the big idea first?
I think you did it last time. So let me give you the last word, and I'll do my big idea for the day. I think my big idea is that home ownership and the importance of home ownership is still around. I think there's been a lot of talk about, hey, people rent more, it's not as big a deal, it's unaffordable, but as you can see with like the House bipartisan bill passing to try to help make a home ownership more affordable, when you see the millennials actually moving to the suburbs in order to buy a house, home ownership is alive and well. It's not always easy. There's challenges to get into it, but it's still important. It's still a big trend in our society. And for those of us who are paying attention to the real estate market, but also the overall economy, it's something important to pay attention to.
That was very well said. Thank you, Chad.
Thank you. Your turn.
All right. Now you put me in the hot seat. It's going to be tough to top that one. Here we go. Sometimes getting past the starting line. So, by the way, I was thinking of you with sports when I was writing this, Chad, just so you know, you were in my heart.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sometimes getting past the starting line can be the hardest part of reaching your dreams. The reality is that the delinquency rate on FHA loans is 3 times as high as conventional loans. We could charge more, and it is justified because of the risk, but it's also important to lower the risk for everyone's homeowners, because these new homeowners, I'm getting a little marbles in my mouth. Okay. We want to lower the risk, because the truth is these guys don't want to default. These people want to own their homes. So let's all be on the same team. They don't want to just get to the starting line. They want to run the race and they want to finish. And the same is true for millennials. The biggest challenge is often getting past the financial obstacles, like student debt, for example, but they are growing up. And even though for many, their starting line to home ownership got pushed back, they are now in the game, and no one should count them out.
Well said. You did top it. I like it.
I don't know about that. And I don't think we're a little marble mouth today, as they say, but we're getting through it. Hopefully we deliver to our listeners some valuable information. I know you certainly did, Chad. It's always such a pleasure to have you on the show. Tell us more about your podcast, your blog, and where people can find you, follow you on social media and all that stuff.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me again. And every week I do the Real Estate and Financial Independence podcast, where, big surprise, I talk about real estate investing and I talk about how to achieve financial independence. Those are my fun topics. So you can join me there. And on any podcast player, just look Coach Carson up and I'll be there. And also write a newsletter and a blog at coachcarson.com. So I pretty much just try to share. I'm trying to help people get started in real estate, trying to help people have more freedom and flexibility with their money. That's something I've had the privilege of being able to do myself. And I really like to help people kind of take those steps for themselves.
And you do that all from Ecuador. Amazing.
You can do it. Yeah, this is a good job. You can do this, your blog and your podcast, from pretty much anywhere. I did have a technical difficulty somewhere in the Gulf of Mexico. We had a little blip in the internet connection line, but we're back. We're trying to finish strong here.
You always make it work. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
and
Bobby.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And Chad will be back in 4 weeks to guest co-host again. He's one of our regulars here, and so we love having him. So everyone, thank you so much. Go be grown-ups.
This show is created and hosted by Josal Sihai and Bobby Rebel, and is a joint venture of BRK Media LLC and Stacking Benjamins LLC, copyright 2019. Our engineer is Caden Thompson, and for a list of our friends who appear on the podcast, head to our website, moneywithfriendspodcast.com. You can also check out our schedule for upcoming recording sessions so you can join us and be part of the show. As with anything, remember, you shouldn't take advice from any of us or any other video or podcast without first talking to your financial advisor, and that the people in this episode are here for your and their entertainment purposes only. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you back here next time with a real episode of Money with Friends.